Welcome to Conversations of Agile Change with Dr. Jen Fram and Lena Ross. Join us as we dive deep into the world of agile change, engaging with individuals who are at the forefront of agile transformation. We explore how they adapt change practices, enhance leadership capabilities, and uncover the strategies that succeed and those that don't. We're recording on the lands of the Boon Wurrung and Wurundjeri Woi Wurrung peoples, and we acknowledge the rich history of change and agility within the First Nations communities Australia-wide. We honour and pay our respects to the Elders both past and present, and extend that respect to any Indigenous persons joining us today.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Conversations of Agile Change. This episode, I'm really excited about this conversation because I am bringing you Jared Collingwood. Jared, welcome to the episode.
Thank you, Jen. It's wonderful to be here. Very excited about today.
Yeah. So let me just explain for the listeners and the viewers why I am excited about this. So Jared has been in our client alumni ecosystem for some time. So he is one of those wonderful, curious human beings who, has done our Agile Change Manager Certificate, Brain Friendly Change, Change Leader, the Basics. You've spent time in my masterclass on change comms, which, you know, is always incredibly validating, but it's also exciting to see how someone then starts piecing together what you teach and using in real life, which we've had the privilege of witnessing that with your teams and what you've done. And in the course of our interactions, we've had some really interesting conversations. And part of this is the fact that you have been studying outside of us, and I'll get you to talk a little bit about that. But you've come up with some thinking about a space which was genuinely novel to me. So it was an area that I really hadn't considered much of before and how it applies. And I thought this would make for a really great recorded conversation. So I'd bring you here. So thank you for letting me do that.
Absolutely.
Jared, for the listeners, viewers, tell them a little bit about yourself. Who are you? What are you doing? What's all these different areas of interest for you?
Oh, right. Yeah. So whenever I'm asked that question, it's always kind of like, where's my starting point? Sometimes for this story, I guess for the purpose of today, I guess I've been doing, I've been a change practitioner for probably about 5 years in Australia now. Before that, was doing this kind of work in China with a bit more of a HR focus, coming from a teaching background, having kind of left Australia after undergrad to go to Japan, Singapore, then China and many other places as well, and ended up on the kind of change journey. COVID was probably the turning point because, I'm working in international education back then, and overnight I'm in China, COVID happens, everywhere shuts down, you got to try and get these classes from face-to-face to online, and we were operating across, 8-9 countries in East and Southeast Asia. And so having to kind of help all the teachers through that as they went on was what kind of really kind of, I think, sent me in this direction of pursuing change full time. And so then when I moved back to Australia in 2022, it's what I wanted to do. I was like, change is what I want. And so since then, I've been trying to look at every opportunity I have to improve what I do so that I can improve the impact I can have on people's lives. Because work matters to people. It's the separation between work life and personal life. It's there. We probably struggle with it a bit these days. But what happens at work, it does affect your personal life. And so if I can help people have a better work day, I can hopefully have them have a better day overall. And that's really motivating for me.
Yeah, wonderful. So there's a couple of areas I also want to pick up on. You are in the process of creating, starting your own consultancy, which is Change Rebounded. Is that correct?
Yep, that's
beautiful.
It, Change Rebounded.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll get into that very shortly, that concept of that name in particular. But you're also doing this really interesting study with NOIDA. Would you like to tell the listeners about NOIDA and what the work is doing, why you chose to go down that path?
Yeah, sure. Sorry, it's actually NIOTA. So it's the National Institute of Organisation Dynamics Australia. No worries. I think I called it NOIDA the first time I saw it too. just felt like it. The spelling seemed better that way when I first saw it.
Yes.
Yeah, so organisation dynamics is a really, really interesting field. And so I'm doing the Master of Leadership and Management there at the moment. And organisation dynamics is just, it's the first really different thing I've come across in quite a while. And it's all about how we as individuals, I guess, then socially construct groups, and those groups then take on kind of minds of their own, and if you think about it, how you yourself might act differently in certain groups and how certain groups do things differently, you can see how that starts to come to life through this social construction of our reality. And so then taking those kind of concepts and linking that with things like open systems theory and then, applying that in organizational settings allows you to kind of look at what's happening in organizations differently. But also when it comes to, change and organizational change, it gives you a completely different lens, because you're not just looking at how do we get them to go from doing this to this. It's, well, why are they doing this to start with? Is this the right thing that they need to be doing? And what actually needs to maybe change to get them to go from A to B. Because if you're just focusing on how do we get them to B, and you're not thinking about, well, why is A even happening in the first place? That's when you start to run into all that trouble. And so through my studies there, it's just started to unearth so much new thinking for me. And I'm so excited. I've still got a couple of years left there. And it is fascinating. I would definitely recommend anyone check it out if that sounds interesting to them. It's awesome.
We'll put the links in the show notes about it. And I think I would encourage people to be following you, because sometimes there's a risk once you start speaking the language of social construction and open systems theory that, it's really quite academic and nebulous and abstract, whereas I think what you do really well is you apply those concepts in real time, and so you often show evidence of that more academic concepts, but in practice, in a very pragmatic way. And so that's really helpful. So I would encourage people to follow you for that reason alone. That said, you have been doing a lot of thinking around why organizations get stuck. Hence, Change Rebounded, as I guess as a service offering. Tell me what you're seeing at the moment.
Right. So the idea of organizations being stuck, I mean, it partly came from some of my studies and some of the papers I'd been reading that kind of talked about how groups got stuck. And then I just started, looking around me and noticing, like, this is weird. I'm seeing the same thing. And it's things like you're having the same conversation for the third or fourth time, with the same people. And you think to yourself, why on earth are we having this conversation again? I thought we'd solved it three conversations ago, and yet the same things are being re-prosecuted again. Other examples are, and there was a couple really good ones from a Four Corners episode a couple of weeks ago, actually, that I thought, this is gold. And so there was on a couple of mining companies, or one mining company in particular, and how they had been delaying their green energy projects to address their climate change goals, and how all of these projects had initially got all of the kind of funding approvals, board approvals, all of that. So you would think then that everything's tickety-boo and there shouldn't be any more problems. But as each project came to go, from the Four Corners reporting anyway, it was, they would get pushed back and be like, oh, not yet. We'll put it in with another one. And so the result is that it doesn't seem like much of them have really started when they're actually supposed to be underway already. And so that, to me, is an organization getting stuck. So it's not necessarily the entire organization is stuck, but something in it is stuck. So they haven't been able to start. Contrast that with another mining company that they put up there, where this company had started doing things and had actually started to, you know, invest, make those steps they needed to actually get going in the right direction. So one was saying it's not there yet, so we can't do it. The other said it's coming and we're going to make sure we're doing the little things we need to help that actually happen. So that was, to me, I thought the best example I've seen of stuck versus unstuck. It just kind of brought home, like, it's everywhere. And it comes in different ways. It could be a whole organization, or it could just be, you know, a part of it, but it shows up in those kind of repetitive behaviors and the same thing. So we see it in projects all the time. You know, it's like, oh, this project, you know, it's actually the third iteration of this project, bro. And you're like, oh, okay. And you soon figure out, you know, a couple of months in, you're like, I can see why. It's really hard.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, it's good. It's good when you get, it's good when you get such clear compare and contrast examples, though, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So we might link to that in the show notes as well. I'll find the link to that episode. So that's really cool. So when you're talking about boundaries, you know, what I'm thinking about is, I guess, the weaponization of therapy speak, right? Mm. So it feels like the term boundaries comes up a lot in daily conversations with someone's violating my boundaries, or I feel like my boundaries are being infringed on. And there's often, you know, you see either a correct understanding of the term or you don't see a correct understanding of the term. But I'm kind of curious, what kind of boundaries are you talking about in context of organizations and change? What does it mean to you?
Yeah. So, I mean, boundaries is one of those topics that is really quite broad. And the reason I think it's quite broad is that, and I'm going to use a bit of a physics metaphor here. So I'm not sure if you're familiar with string theory. There we go. Excellent. So I tend to think of boundaries very similar to strings in string theory. So they're lines, or, you know, they could be a, you know, join them end to end to a circle, or you could stick them together into other shapes to create areas that have an inside and an outside, basically. And in the same way that strings build the physical world in physics under that theory, I see boundaries as building our perception of the world in that very similar kind of way. So there is, you know, in a way, there's a kind of infinite complexity to boundaries. But just because boundaries are there doesn't always mean that they're the important ones to focus on. And there's always going to be some that you don't know about. There'll be some that are more obvious. But to me, when it comes to change, think of the first boundary that's important, I guess, when it comes to change is the organizational boundary. So you have a definition of what is inside the organization, what is outside the organization. So that's kind of that first boundary. And, you know, you can link that in then with systems thinking and stuff like that. So you need stuff to get in so that stuff can get out, and that keeps what's on the inside of the boundary there alive, essentially. But you can break it down further then too. So then you have, you know, divisions or teams, and those are the boundaries that are pretty visible and that we can always see. But then there's boundaries that you can't see. So So they're the invisible ones inside organizations. And so those are things like the assumptions that we operate on. Because assumptions are just a boundary that we've created for ourselves, or perhaps, you know, the organization has created for itself of what is okay. You know, on the inside we have okay things, and on the outside we have not okay things. So that's why I like assumptions are so interesting because of that. So assumptions are also there, but also things like tasks. So what you're supposed to be doing. So I think of a task as, you know, a set of boundaries. And I think Agile is a great example of like, well, set boundaries in this case, because you have things like, say, user stories. So they're actually really clear little sets of boundaries there of, you know, who it's for and what it's supposed to do and why it does it. So that creates a nice little boundary. And with that then, and the clarity that boundary creates, you can actually experiment inside to see how do you actually achieve that. And that's the beauty of the boundaries then, once you get to that point, is when you have the right boundaries in place, operating in the right way with each other, the kind of right settings, I guess you could say, then within those boundaries, you can feel safe and you can do things. So to, I guess, jump into the safety angle there and that feeling safe. We recently got a new fence around our home. And so when the fence is up, you know, that's your boundary to your property. No, it's the boundary. It's called exactly that. And the fence is really just that physical representation of the boundary. When we're getting refenced, of course, you know, that fence comes down. It is incredible how different you feel when that boundary is suddenly not there anymore. You feel like exposed almost. You're like, oh God, people from the street can see all the way into the backyard, you know, and you don't do the same things anymore. Yeah. You know, so boundaries and their presence and how strong they are, you know, or their qualities, I guess you could say, also then, you know, influence our behavior. Because they influence the way we feel. And so if you get the right ones, it's great. If you get the wrong ones, not so great.
Yeah. So now what's coming up for me is you're taking me back to my org psych teachings.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And so one of the concepts that was always very big in that time or in the courses that I taught was bounded rationality. And the concept that I think the example we used to give, the example was when people were on the beach and the tsunami was coming in, they wouldn't run. And the reason why they wouldn't run was that they had a cognitive boundary of what was rational. Their brains couldn't make sense of what they were seeing coming through, which changed their behavior, right? And so that, and I had always thought about that in context of change, to say sometimes the change we want to introduce is limited by bounded rationality, that people can't imagine it. They've never seen it before. They don't know how to behave in the presence of what is new coming forward to them. How does that concept, I've just thrown complete curveball at you.
No, I love it.
Like that's,
yeah. So I'm going to go with almost in a way, so the tsunami coming in, I guess, to me, you could almost see like the front of the tsunami there as it comes in. So that in itself is a boundary. And it's very much, if you, I guess, kind of looked at it and saw that, there would probably, I imagine, be a perception of, on this side of the boundary, like I am okay, but on that side of the boundary, I'm not going to be okay. But also, it's not static, like it's moving to you quite fast. And so, yeah, if you're, yeah, I could only imagine if a change had been presented like that, kind of coming in, yeah, you're gonna probably want to freeze.
Well, it's about what you can imagine to be true. And I think what I was also hearing with what you were talking about before is this polarization of clarity and uncertainty. So boundaries operate in the space of clarity. They operate to give you more clarity. When you have clarity, you feel safe. You can, you know your role. Your user stories make things clearer, right?
Mm.
But outside that boundary is uncertainty, and that's why we want the boundaries, right? And so that bounded rationality is saying, I'm okay cognitively to the point where I understand what's happening. Mm. And uncertainty introduces, it extends my boundaries of rationality, basically. And I can't operate. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's cool. And I mean, also, it's kind of like when you're looking at that boundary and how quick it's approaching, there's this, you know, you could imagine that some people might have that sense of, I know, you know, how fast I can run. There's a boundary to that, to the speed I could go to get away, to where the nearest place I might be able to be safe is. Yeah. They're all too far, like within the boundaries 100%. Of myself that I know. There's nothing I can do.
If you've never experienced it before, you think getting up 1 meter higher is going to make you safe.
Yeah.
The reality is you need to be 10 meters higher, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, I told you there was a high potential that we would nerd out together on this.
No, I loved it. Yeah, that's great. I'm going to have to read up on that concept a bit. But yeah, that kind of like, org site stuff. Like the organizational dynamics and stuff, they come from very similar schools. In the past. So that's cool.
So I think what that conversation, though, has teased out for me is I can see that I've jumped into boundaries are about control, and boundaries potentially could be about governance and, you know, keeping things really tight and tidy. Whereas I think what you had said initially was they're actually an opportunity for creativity, that the right type of boundaries can actually encourage innovation and creativity. Can you share more on that?
Yeah, absolutely. There is often, you know, that run to, boundaries are all about control and governance and stuff. And those are boundaries. And they might be the right boundaries even in some cases. But it's just one type, really. And it's even those are about kind of making it safe to do things in a way. It's just that the what you can do is very much prescribed. So those boundaries are much, much tighter. When it comes to using boundaries to create for creativity and, you know, things like co-creation and stuff like that, really it's about figuring out what are the right boundaries that need to be in place for people to feel safe so that they can experiment with new ways and then kind of, you know, engage in that sense making and co-creation together to create the future. And so typically for that, there's the simple ones of always like kind of task. So making sure we've got a very clear task to focus on, because that way you can, if you go off task, you can go, hold on, back to the task, makes people feel certain that this is what we're here to work on, territory or place. So having somewhere where you do it, so like in a meeting room or in this meeting, for example, in this podcast, you know, those are things that is that kind of territory one. Then there's also time, so having a clear time boundaries, so start and finish, super important. And from there, it's also, you know, you need to have the boundaries to develop trust. And so this depends a lot then on organizations or the teams you're working with, and you have to figure those boundaries out. But let's just assume they're not too bad. And actually, I'll bring an example here from my time at Great Southern Bank recently, where I was practice lead, and we were having a team day, and one of the activities that one of my team introduced was we're each given a couple deck of cards and just told the instruction, build it as high as you can. And then you got to place a phone on top of it at the end, and it's got to stay there without falling down. I was like, okay. And immediately, you know, you start to create it, and you're going with, you know, the typical old, you know, the triangles, trying to do that. And you're like, oh, but is it going to hold the phone? It doesn't. And it collapses, and, you know, everything's going everywhere, and there's no progress being made. But because you've got the time boundary, so it's at a time boundary of you've got, it was 10 minutes, 5-10 minutes place. So we were just in a room, just us. No one could come in. No one else could come in and out. So we knew we were safe amongst the team there. We trusted each other, and we knew, you know, that we could open those boundaries with each other, and they were going to stay within the team, not go outside the team. So that's probably one of the other big boundaries there when it comes to trust. Anyway, because we had that in place, we're madly kind of going at it, trying to work out how to do it. One of my team, she just went, oh, hold on, I think we can like bend the cards. And I was like, oh, yep, great, no worries. I just started bending cards straight away. She went and asked if she was allowed to do that. And was told yes, and so then came back. And there's an interesting point about the difference in behavior there that we can come to later. But then in building those cards, so we'd questioned that assumption that we couldn't bend the cards or damage the cards in some way. So we'd broken that boundary, and that allowed us then to achieve our goal. But because we were within that environment that had the right boundaries in place initially, we could actually experiment and come up with those things. Like if we had been doing that, you know, on the office floor with teams around us that we didn't know, we would never have behaved in that way and come to that kind of conclusion to even question that assumption that, you know, we couldn't damage the cards, so therefore couldn't do it. So that's how it can kind of, you know, creativity and that co-creating together then. So as soon as the boundary was questioned, I just went, yes, we'll do it. Because I'm much more comfortable, I think, with seeing what happens if you cross a boundary to try and get information. Whereas my colleague, she wanted the permission to cross the boundary first. And there's good and bad in each. You know, in crossing the boundary without kind of asking, depending on the boundary, you know, it may be good, it may not. But equally in asking about the boundary, if it's a boundary that might need to be moved, but they don't want to move it, in asking, you could deny yourself the possibility to move it if they go, no, you can't do that. So, yeah.
What a fabulous, fabulous example in practice. I will say at the moment, we have got very torrential rain happening behind me. So I'm hoping that I'm going to be able to edit out in the audio the noise of heavy rain behind my voice, but we will see.
I can't hear anything. So you're all okay. Good.
This is good.
It's all good. And I've got a lovely sunny day here in Brisbane, just to juxtapose those two.
winter has definitely hit in Melbourne, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Can I get back to, heard you say a couple of things. One, you talked about user stories as examples of boundaries. You talked about why boundary work is so prevalent, I think, in agile and agile change. Can you unpack that a little bit more? Because I'm curious, because sometimes I think, you know, we think of, well, one of the biggest criticisms of agile is it doesn't have structure, you know, and there's no project plan and, you know, all that kind of carry on. But tell me more about how boundaries intersect with agile change.
Yeah. So, I mean, the way I kind of look at agile and agile change is, you know, it's just a constant series of opening and closing boundaries and redrawing them as new information comes to light. So, we put boundaries in place in agile change and we say, here's where we're going to start. And then we see how that goes. And we go, okay, that's the feedback. Well, so this was right, but this was wrong, and this was wrong. And so we redraw the boundaries around what that task was. Maybe it was the boundaries we'd set on our task where we were going to involve these two teams, you know, team A and team B, in the co-creation. And then we realize, hold on, team C, D, and E also actually kind of need input here. Well, then we just draw new boundaries, a new boundary, and we say, who's involved? You know, teams A to E. And so it's really just about being adaptive and adapting the boundaries to the actual, you know, data that sits in front of us at the moment. And by data too, it's not just the, you know, the numbers in a spreadsheet. It's people's reactions to things that happen to them. It's the emotions that we ourselves as change managers experience that can tell us if things are right or wrong sometimes. So that at its core, I think, is what's great with agile change. And if you look at, you know, agile, that, you know, original agile manifesto too, was it was all about resetting the boundaries for things. So, you know, people over processes. It wasn't that you didn't need boundaries around processes. It was just that if you focused on those boundaries, not the boundaries around that, you know, people needed, then you weren't going to get the best outcome. And in the I've forgotten this one now. I had it in my mind just like before we actually jumped on the podcast. The one that was about, was it collaboration over contract negotiation? Is it?
Now you're going to put me on the spot. I appreciate that. Thank you. But it's close to that. Yes.
Yeah. That one. And it's like, that's, you know, just acknowledging that boundaries change.
Yeah.
You know, and they can't be set in stone. And the world we live in today, our boundaries are changing constantly. You know, I mean, we have these things in our pockets, you know, that bring the entire world through from, you know, out there into our personal boundary all day, every day. So,
and for the listeners, Jared is currently grabbing his smartphone.
Yeah.
So
I show it again, let the listeners again.
Showing it to the listeners. Okay, it's on YouTube as well. So, you know, it makes sense. Do you know what I'm absolutely loving about that? Is you are identifying, and I don't think I have seen it identified much at all, that boundary work is a dynamic capability for change practitioners.
Yeah.
And when you say that, like I've gone, yeah, of course it is. Of course that's what we're doing every day. But to actually hear it that way, to say, actually, yeah, my strengths are in boundary work. It is dynamic. It is flexing, and, you know, sometimes they're tight, sometimes they're loose, and that's dependent. And why it thrives in Agile is because you are iterating based on feedback and data to what should the tension look like on that boundary, and which boundary and where is it. So I love that.
Yeah.
That's so cool. I expect to see all the listeners updating their LinkedIn profiles with a sentence on their boundary work. We're gonna make this big. I think one of the other things that I have found interesting in our previous conversations is the treatment of boundaries and power. This notion of, you know, where does power sit in a boundary setting? Who dictates what the boundary is? Who gets to push back on the boundary?
That's a boundary, you know, itself.
Well, it is. And we talk about, you talked about co-creation is actually the first step of co-creation is co-creating the boundaries together. But somebody has initiated that whole conversation to allow it to happen. And so that is a power position. So tell me your thoughts on power and boundaries.
Yeah. So, I mean, this was one of the, when I kind of came across this concept and dove into it, this was one of the things that actually started to really bring it all together and make it not just something that was a useful way to explain and kind of link things in a kind of, you know, grand unifying unifying theory kind of thing, but it's what changed it from being just like explanatory into this is something that has real meaning, I think, because if you think about even just the boundaries around teams and the way information flows in and out of teams within organizations, if someone has control over that, they can influence what other teams know. And so the more a person or person's group team is able to exercise control over things like that, then that is where power can start to accrete. And then you have things like that can lead to defining problems. So to define a problem, we start with, you know, information of some kind. Whoever is the person or persons, you know, who can put that forward, that's, you know, where power may lie. But of course, you have to, you know, dig into that further, but to find out where it might really lie. But if you're able to define the problem, that means you've also had a hand in defining the solution, because you can't solve for something that's not the problem. So that's really powerful. And if you're the one who's kind of defining the context around decisions, you know, so you're drawing those boundaries around what's in and what's out of what we're deciding today, that's powerful too, because that's deciding the agenda. And so, as soon as you put it into terms like that, I'm sure all the listeners are like, oh yeah, defining the agenda. Yeah, that's definitely heard that as powerful. And there you go. That's how it kind of builds up from these things, because it's all about what's in and what's out.
Again, for the benefits of the listeners, because I'm pretty sure you've already got it, and the viewers. So we recently did a white paper on power and change. And what you're talking about there really fits into Professor Cynthia Hardy's framework of power in organizations. And so if that's a new concept for people, I would encourage you to download the white paper from our resources page. And you can get more into what it means to have, you know, power of the agenda and, you know, those kind of things. It's definitely a boundary. The topic of the day, which, you know, everybody is talking about, AI. Mm. What is the intersection or the implications of AI and boundary work? Or what is the boundary work to be done?
Oh, there's so many ways to kind of come at this one, because it's such a, I mean, it's probably like the single biggest kind of disruption to boundaries that we've had, ever really. Because if we think about, you know, like the internet, when it came along and we started getting on, like that was a big disruption to boundaries, because it, you know, allowed us to bring parts of the world into our home, through visiting websites. But it was still limited by what was out there. And as more has come along, you know, we've been able to, you know, bring more in. But with AI, instead of having to go to lots of different websites, it brings, you know, that entire knowledge of the world in a way into your boundary through just this little portal. So that in itself opens up a whole lot of possibilities, because you can use it for, you know, learning all sorts of new skills and stuff like that, which is typically how I like to use it. But so that is, you know, it's an almost unbounded amount of information you now have access to. Where do you start if you don't have boundaries around how you're going to use it? You just sit there kind of lost. And, you know, I've seen people like that when they're starting out, typically, like, kind of like, what do I do? And they just don't really do anything because they're not sure where to start, because it's this big thing that can do all this stuff, but you don't know what you want it to do first. So I think the first thing is with AI is setting boundaries yourself for what you want to do with it. That will help you move forward. And even in things like prompting, you know, people talk about, you know, kind of like onboarding it like an employee in each chat. You know, you're setting its boundaries of what you want it to do. Each prompt is a set of boundaries for it to execute instructions. Mm. And I think it's actually really interesting how it also shows us how bad we are at boundaries sometimes, because if it took me a while to learn how to prompt. And then I realized it was good. I was actually setting boundaries for things. I was like, no, I don't want to tell it not to do that because maybe it'll do something amazing over there. You know, and it wouldn't. It would just like spit back, you know, awful results. And I was like, why is it doing this to me? And then, of course, you know, you realize, oh, in a way, it's almost, you know, treat it like a person when you give it instructions, because the clearer your instructions and making sure that there's just the right space for creativity. Well, I don't want to use the word creativity with AI, but just the right amount of kind of leeway for things means that within that space, you know, it can do what it needs to do.
I think there's going to be many, many PhD theses created on boundary work and AI.
You think about ethics, AI.
Yeah. What are your ethical boundaries with AI? You think about as a content creator, you used to have the illusion of boundaries that people couldn't access. It would take people a lot of effort to copy what you were doing, right? Mm. And now we're in a position where people are scraping all your content and spinning up AI coaches and trying to sell it back to you to say, hey, we've created a Jen Fram coach and you can buy it back off us.
Wow.
So, yeah, right? Naughty. So those boundaries. It's a wild, wild world out there without boundaries in AI, I would argue. So,
absolutely. It's,
you know.
It's broken all the boundaries that were there that stopped people from being able to do those things.
Yeah. And I think it's, you also see it in like governments trying to bring in legislation to create some level of boundary. And
absolutely. All legislation is boundaries, you know, of what you can and can't do kind of thing. And that's why some work and some don't, because not all boundaries are appropriate, you know? Just because you put it in doesn't mean it's going to work. There'll always be people who don't follow.
Which drives the beginning of my rapid fire questions to round this out. Are you ready? So one boundary leaders get wrong most often.
Time boundaries. They're terrible at them. They're late for meetings. They run meetings over time. Stick to your time boundaries. It's amazing what happens when you stick to your time boundaries.
Okay, that's the first service offering from Rebounded Change, right?
Yeah.
Second question, one simple shift that creates immediate movement.
Oh, clarity on task, I think. If you can get really good, clear and crisp on task and what's on task and what's not on task, that will help to create movement straight away. But you can't stop there. If you stop there, you might as well not start. Because there's a lot of different boundaries you're going to come across that will all need tuning, and it's difficult.
Yeah, great. Third question, what should people pay more attention to this year?
I'm going to take us right back to the start of the podcast just about, actually. I think it's personal boundaries and our boundaries of, you know, ourselves. So me versus not me, almost. There's everything out there at the moment is screaming at us to let it in across our boundaries, you know, and to take our attention and to take, you know, and to become part of us, you know, this whole ecosystem of, you know, apps and AI and technology out there these days is, we tend to look at it as, oh, it's trying to get our attention. I look at it as it's intentionally trying to invade our boundaries. So, you know, for instance, you you know this, you know, I don't have my notifications on LinkedIn, which is why I sometimes don't check it for a few days. I forget about it. Because I, you know, I like to have that separation. So that if it's, if I'm, you know, doing me things, I don't have work or, you know, anything else kind of coming in. Cause it's really important, because if we're going to do the hard work that we do, we need to be able to have that clear boundary for ourselves. Mm-hmm. That doesn't just apply to change practitioners. I think that applies to everyone. Yeah. In this world today, there's just so much trying to break down our boundaries. Make some time for yourself.
Yeah. Very profound wisdom there, Jared. I think what I've loved about this conversation, I want to thank you. You've given me a great aha around the dynamic capability that is boundary work for change practitioners. I had not considered that, and I think that's incredibly powerful. What I will say for folks, even though he's just told you he doesn't check LinkedIn that often, he actually is very active on LinkedIn. And so I would encourage you to connect with Jared on LinkedIn, but I'm going to put a lot of links in the show notes for this. Jared Collingwood, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Jen. This has been awesome. Loved it.
Thanks for joining us on this conversation of Agile Change. If you're keen for more insights and inspiration from Dr. Jen Fromm and Lena Ross, you can connect on LinkedIn to stay updated with their latest thoughts and discoveries. Follow the Agile Change Leadership Institute on LinkedIn or Facebook for a wealth of valuable resources. Subscribe to our bi-weekly sprint notes, where you'll find thought-provoking content delivered straight to your inbox. Or check out @AgileChange on Instagram. We look forward to having you back for more insightful conversations on Agile Change. Until next time, be brave, be curious, and have fun with change.